Welcome to Pharma Docs with your host, myself, Dr. Jay Resnick, and Dr. John Robertson. Practicing oral surgeons bring you the latest and greatest in pharmacology as it affects you in your daily dental practice. All right. Hello, and welcome to today's edition of Pharma Docs. I'm in Los Angeles, California, sunny LA, Dr. Jay Resnick, and then in Hattiesburg, Mississippi is...
John Robertson. Hello, everybody with the Pharma Nation. It's good to have you back again tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice to get together again. So we've got actually a pretty good show for tonight. We're going to talk about three new drugs that were recently approved by the FDA. And then we're going to have an in-depth discussion or begin an in-depth discussion on non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which is a prescription that we write very frequently. Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and start talking about the first drug?
Great. Jay, that first drug is Opzelura. Mm-hmm. And it's a topical cream that is used for eczema. And, you know, it just got approved. Now, you might be sitting there thinking right now, okay, why are they bringing this up right now? Well, this drug is a pretty powerful drug.
Yeah, it's basically a biologic, and you don't really, and so, you know, as a biologic, what it does is it modulates the immune system, tones down the immune system through some chemical processes. Actually, the pathway is the Janus kinase system is what it affects.
Wait, Janus kinase, Jay, that sounds like a mutual fund or something.
It does, but actually Janus was a Roman god who was the god of beginnings, endings, and duality. And the reason it was the enzyme was called that is because this has two phosphate transport domains on it. And so it's... it kind of has dual function, that the two domains are almost identical. And so that's where it got the name. Okay. So, but what's interesting is, so it affects this Janus kinase system. And because it does that, it affects your, or reduces your immunity. It down modulates your immune system. And so, you know, if patients taking an oral medication that does this, and you know, some of the other, like let's say they're taking a Humira or something like that for their ulcerative colitis, that's a systemic medication. But with Opzelura, it's a topical, and you wouldn't think of a topical as being that much of an issue, but in fact it really is. It really does get absorbed into the bloodstream and has some of the same effects as a parenteral or an oral anti-metabolite biologic rather.
So Jay, is practicing dentists out there, what do we got to be concerned about this when that patient comes in there and they're, hey, I have eczema and I'm on this new drug, doc. You got to find out what that new drug is.
Yeah. We really got to be concerned about the fact that their immune system is decreased. They're not as immune competent. And so these patients will tend to get more infections, and dental infections will be worse. They may get infected after a simple procedure, so you've got to make sure you cover them with antibiotics. They may also get some more serious infections like TB, viral infections, hepatitis B. They can be reactivated, or they can get it new because of this immune deficiency that this topical medication gives to them. So you got to be really careful with these patients as far as making sure that they're covered for antibiotics, and you try to do your procedure as atraumatically as possible. Every quarter I get from the California Medical Association a little newsletter that talks about different topics and laws that are being passed. And it also has a section on doctors who've been disciplined in the last quarter. And there was one that caught my eye. It was a doctor who actually prescribed Humira for a patient, but he failed to ask them about their history of hepatitis, about their history of TB, and started the patient on this drug. And the patient actually got a severe, had reactivation of their TB and had a pretty severe case and almost died. So,
well, fortunately, as dentists, we don't have to worry about that, but yeah. we do need to worry about that patient being on that drug. Because like you said, it's best to cover that patient with antibiotics if you're doing any type of invasive procedure.
But you exactly.
know, Jay, talking about that right there. Okay. That drug, the Janus kinase.
Yeah.
It's part of an immunosuppressant drug category.
Right.
And there's quite a few drugs in there, like the corticosteroids.
Yeah.
The JK inhibitors that we just talked about. Another one of those is Xeljanz. You've seen the commercial for that.
Yeah.
The calcineurin inhibitors. That makes up the cyclosporins as well, too. The
yeah.
IMDH inhibitors, such as Imuran for RA. And also, well,
I mean, those are more systemic. It's pretty right. rare. Even with a topical steroid, right. the patients don't get that immune suppression, and they don't get the typical appearance that someone who's on chronic steroids gets.
Correct. But as practicing dentists, we got to be prepared for all these immunosuppressant drugs our patients are on, because, like you said earlier, a weakened immune system. Bottom line, we got to be smart about our surgeries. And yeah. cover these patients with antibiotics, because, you know, that just doesn't end. You also said biologics.
Right.
There's a slew of biologics out there as well, too. So, and we'll eventually cover all of those, but there's quite a few as well. So remember out there, Pharma Nation, your immunosuppressant drugs.
Mm-hmm. And now you have a topical that has that yeah. same systemic effect.
Yeah. That's right. Now you have a topical just as strong as a systemic immunosuppressant.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
All right. So the next drug on our list is Wegovy. And this yes. is a semaglutide, which is a glucagon-like peptide, GLP-1 agonist, receptor agonist. And what it does, it's used as an adjunct to diet and exercise in patients who are overweight by suppressing the patient's appetite. And so they define overweight as a BMI over 27, equal to or over 27, and obese as equal to or over 30. And just to put that in a little perspective, if you're 5'10" and you weigh 187, that puts you at that 27, a BMI of 27. And if you weigh 209 and you're 5'10", you're considered obese.
So, Jay, the bottom line. Hmm. A patient on this drug, red flag. Why? You have an obese patient in your office. What are all of the problems associated with obesity? I mean, Jay, I talk about it in all of my medical emergencies.
Yeah.
Hypertension, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, GERD, sleep apnea, depression. All right. Yeah. And guess what else, Jay? They're on a slew of medications.
Yeah. Yeah. They're also a higher cardiac risk and higher risk of diabetes too.
And every point above that BMI of 30, Jay, the cardiovascular system is so great. Mm-hmm. It starts producing collateral blood vessels. And for every point, it creates about 5 extra miles of blood mm-hmm. vessels mm-hmm. to make up for the stress and strain that you're putting on your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
5 miles for every point above that 30.
Wow.
So if they come in
with a lot of blood 40, vessels.
Yeah. Oh, that's a lot of blood vessels.
Yeah.
Because your body's trying to compensate for all of the adipose tissue that's basically killing your organs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It puts a tremendous strain not only on the cardiovascular system, but on the musculoskeletal system.
Right. So we have to think about, Jay, all of the medical emergencies that are associated with this as well, too. So when that person's in the chair, you're prone to having to treat a medical emergency at any given time. Like in my home state, 36% obesity rate.
Mm-hmm.
36.
Yeah.
Pretty significant, Jay.
Yeah, that certainly is. Yeah, I mean, the other thing is if you're sedating a patient like this, you're sedating a patient who is overweight and, you know, you've got to be concerned about the fact that they could have an obstructed airway, sleep apnea while you're sedating them. So you've got to be really conscientious of their airway. They're, again, at heightened risk of cardiovascular disease because of their being obese or even overweight. Their blood pressure may be high, you know, so they may have significant hypertension, especially when they come to the dental office, it goes up even further. And
hopefully
again,
we're checking those blood pressures, Jay, every single time a patient comes in, get a good baseline. So you always have a starting point.
Yeah. And you know, when these patients come in, be sure you ask them about diabetes, because, you know, I see patients all the time who, don't put down diabetes as one of their health problems. Yet they will, be on, you know, a couple medications for diabetes.
Right.
Right.
So, Jay, just yesterday I had to take a young lady to the hospital because her BMI, get ready for this, 68.
Wow.
68. There was no way I was treating that person in my office.
Yeah. No, you're not going to put a patient like that to sleep.
That is a high risk patient right there. Yeah. That's correct. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to number three.
Okay, so the next drug on our list is Aduhelm, aducanumab. How's that for a fancy name? So anything that ends in umab means that it's a human monoclonal antibody drug. So the MAB, monoclonal antibody, when you see drugs that end in mab or umab, that's what they are. They're monoclonal antibodies are used a lot for cancer treatment. But in this case, this new drug, and actually it's been out since June, is used for treating Alzheimer's disease.
Well, it sounds like a great drug, Jay. I mean, is it being used a lot right now?
Well, the way that it works is that it basically is directed against beta amyloid beta. And it has been shown to significantly reduce the amount of amyloid. And as you know, it's amyloid that sort of short circuits in the brain and leads to the loss of memory and intellectual function. And a lot of times eventually to, you know, death of the patient after a kind of a slow decline. And, you know, all these things get worse over time. And if you can get rid of the amyloid or reduce the amount of amyloid, the hope is that that the disease won't get worse, or maybe even you could reverse it. Now, the problem with this drug is it's actually been out since June. And you would think, as you said, that it would be going gangbusters, because there are 6 million people in the U.S. with Alzheimer's. And you would think they would want this treatment.
Yeah. Well, is it showing any improvement in Alzheimer's?
Well, what the issues are with it is, number one, it's very expensive. It's $58,000 per year, and it's given by a monthly injection. Okay, so it's very expensive. It actually has not been shown definitively that it works. It absolutely reduces the amount of amyloid, but it does not. There have been two major studies. One said that it, by reducing the amount of amyloid, they did improve mental function, and the other study said just the opposite. So it's kind of, you're kind of on the fence of whether this actually does what it's supposed to. Now, it's kind of like having a drug that lowers your cholesterol but doesn't affect your cardiovascular risk.
Gotcha. So this, what about any ADRs or complications? And remember out there, Farman, ADR is adverse drug reaction. Yeah.
Well, the problem with this drug is that, you know, as wonderful as it sounds, another problem with it, in addition to it not being necessarily effective to improve Alzheimer's, even though it reduces amyloid and the cost, is that two of the most significant side effects, and we see this in about 35% of patients, is it can cause intracerebral hemorrhage and swelling. And in some patients, it can be very significant. Other patients, it's reversible when the patient stops taking the drug. But those things have really worked against the popularity or the popularity of use of Aduhelm.
And, you know, it sounds so promising because this is the very first drug ever released that actively works against the beta amyloid.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, okay, but here's the great thing, Jay. If they got this, there's more coming.
Right.
There's other companies creating these biologics.
Other companies are trying to manufacture other drugs that will target amyloid. And hopefully one of them will actually be effective clinically. So we'll see about that.
I hope so, because it's such a devastating disease right
there. Oh, it is, for sure. And, I think it's affected just about everybody's families.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, because right now the other Alzheimer's drugs are the cholinesterase inhibitors like Aricept and Exelon. Yeah. Then also you got the glutamate regulators, and that's Namenda. So you've seen that on patients as well, too. And then they got Namazaric, which is both a cholinesterase inhibitor and a glutamate receptor. Uh-huh. Now, believe it or not, one of the side effects with these medications in Alzheimer patients, Jay, insomnia. Mm-hmm. So a drug has been created called Belsomra, B-E-L-S-O-M-R-A, and it inhibits orexin. Orexin is actually a neurotransmitter that's used during the sleep-wake cycle. So if we can inhibit that, these patients can now get some sleep.
Yeah. I mean, clinically, definitely all those drugs don't help with cognitive function. They may, in a very small respect, inhibit the decline or slow down the decline.
Right.
But I think there's nothing as promising as Aduhelm or other drugs that will be similar to it that will target amyloid directly.
Let's hope so, because as we both said, it's a devastating disease. Not only for the patient, but for the family, because here's a loved one that's now forgotten everything. Okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's just brutal on everybody. So here's to the big pharma out there. Keep going. Find us those right drugs.
Yeah.
So all right, let's
by the time we get to that age.
Yeah. So let's get into our both of our favorite drugs, right?
Okay.
NSAIDs.
Yep. We use them all the time. And, you know, they're really popular drugs. They're one of the most commonly prescribed drugs. Number one would be cardiovascular drugs and blood pressure drugs.
Yes.
Number two would be endocrine drugs like thyroid or corticosteroids. And number three is psychiatric drugs, antidepressants, anti-anxiety, drugs that work to help with bipolar disorder, antipsychotics. Those are the third most popular. And then number four come the analgesics, of which nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs are one of the major categories. So they've got a lot of very valuable, worthwhile qualities. And one of which, of course, is they're anti-inflammatory.
Yes.
They're also antipyretic, so they help with fever reduction. They're analgesic, which is why one of the reasons we take them is to reduce pain. And the fourth property is that some of them are antiplatelet. And of course, we use that therapeutically with regard to aspirin, that patients who are trying to avoid thrombosis will, and this is more towards the, aspirin works more towards the COX-1 cyclooxygenase, is it helps reduce the risk of forming a clot. And of course, if you do get a heart attack or suspect a heart attack, you take a higher dose of aspirin. Now, nonsteroidals affect what's known as the cyclooxygenase system.
Yes.
And this is what basically basically the membrane phospholipids get broken down into arachidonic acid by phospholipase A2. And then the arachidonic acid gets by the cyclooxygenase system, COX-1, COX-2 becomes oxygenated, and it forms a number of prostaglandins. One of the important ones, especially as respect to this anti-clotting anti-clotting property of aspirin, is that it inhibits prostaglandin I2, which tends to contribute to or cause platelet aggregation. And at the opposite end is prostaglandin, prostacycline, prostacycline, which is affected more by the COX-2 inhibitors.
And remember, so, last time we talked about that COX-2 inhibitor, celecoxib,
yeah,
mixed in with tramadol, Seglentis. Mm-hmm. But you know, Jay, when you look at the various classes out there, you got the salicylates, which includes aspirin.
Aspirin, which was one of the first. And aspirin's been around since the late 1890s.
I believe it was synthesized from a willow bark tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the Bayer company.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why I guess Bayer is the most popular aspirin.
Then you got the aryl alkanoic acids like mm-hmm. diclofenac, which we all know is Voltaren, is probably the most powerful NSAID out there. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Indocin, which is indomethacin as well, too.
Yeah, and that when I was in med school, that was that along with allopurinol were the two drugs that were used a lot for gout. So right. The allopurinol inhibited the formation of uric acid crystals, and the indomethacin helped with the inflammatory pain of that disorder.
Yeah. And then we got the pyrroles, which the only one in that class is ketorolac, also known as Toradol.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite go-to drug.
Yeah.
I love that drug. One in the morning, one in the evening, done. Okay. Yeah. I'll even have my patients take one of those in the morning with one Tylenol. Mm-hmm. Toradol, Tylenol. Great rhyming combination there. Easy for the patient to remember. Yeah,
it is a great drug. And one of the other things about it that makes it unique is it comes in both in a injectable formulation. So it can be given IV or IM, and 30 milligrams of IV Toradol has the efficacy as far as pain management as 10 milligrams of morphine.
Yes.
So it's pretty powerful stuff.
It is. And then we have the aryl propionic acids, which is our favorite drug also, ibuprofen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are the profens.
Ketoprofen, anything profen is in the aryl propionic acid family, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got the enolic acids. That includes like feldene, meloxicam. Now, meloxicam is a great drug because you can do 7.5 milligrams BID twice a day, or you can do 15 milligrams once a day, all right? Yeah. So if you're that practitioner out there, like, how can I streamline all of these medicines I'm giving for analgesia? Mm-hmm. Think about those for BID, or even we have meloxicam is QD. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yep.
And then makes, of course, we talked about the COX-2 inhibitor. Oh yeah. The COX-2, the only one out there is celecoxib.
Well, there's also the naphthyl alkylones, and that includes nabumetone, which is Relafen. And now the brand Relafen has been discontinued in the United States, but it's still prescribed in a generic form. And that's a very useful drug too. I used to give that to some of my TMJ patients, and it was very effective.
Now, one thing I would like to bring up again, Jay, talking about, since you brought up about aspirin and the cardioprotective ability of aspirin at 81 milligrams.
Right.
Okay. This is very important. This is something I bring up when I just start discussing about, you know, when we get into medical emergencies, talking about angina, and then when you suspect a heart attack, what you should give right there. But hold that thought out there. So if you have a patient that comes into your office, a procedure is done, and they put on their ASA 81, and you don't like to write narcotics, good for you. You choose to go with ibuprofen. Mm-hmm. You must make sure that the ibuprofen and aspirin are taken correctly so that you do not affect the cardioprotective activity of that aspirin.
Yeah.
So there were two thoughts out there. Give the ibuprofen, then wait like 8 hours to take the aspirin, or take the aspirin and wait an hour to start with the ibuprofen. Mm. That's the best way for your patients to remember. So if you're going to do with ibuprofen 600 milligrams TID, tell your patient, okay, look, you're taking the 81 milligram. So I want you to take it at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m, wait 1 hour, then take your ibuprofen. Yep. Because the last thing we want to do, Jay, is have our patients take it together. All right.
Right. Right. Now, I'm definitely not take it together.
Okay. Don't take it together, but I'm going to get granular here. Okay. So let's say someone's taking it to try to prevent a heart attack. Well, they take the ibuprofen that you prescribed at the same time with their aspirin. They have a heart attack. All right. Because that diminished the cardioprotective activity there. All right.
Yeah.
You're liable for that. All right.
Yep. So keep that in mind.
Prescribe that medication.
Yeah. Now, the last category we were going to talk about or just mention is the COX-2 inhibitors.
Yes.
And there's really only one in that category that's used here in the U.S., and that's celecoxib, otherwise known as Celebrex. And so that's a twice-a-day dosing, and it's COX-2 selective. So it basically it reduces pain, inflammation, swelling, without having the adverse effects, let's say, on the GI system and causing gastritis.
Great cytoprotection of the GI. Absolutely. Yeah. Great drug for that. And we'll continue to write more and more of this drug as well, too.
Yeah. But all these drugs, keep in mind, all these non-steroidals come with a black box warning of increased risk of myocardial infarction. And the way that works is... It depends on the ratio of COX-1 to COX-2. So if they're more COX-1, they tend not to be as significant, but more towards the COX-2 side. And we'll talk about that in 2 weeks. Then you have a higher risk. And so you've got to be real careful with these drugs. So what happens is, as I mentioned, the prostaglandin I2 helps inhibit platelet aggregation, whereas thromboxane A2, which is part of the COX-1 pathway, does cause platelet aggregation. And so what happens with the COX-2 inhibitors is they block the PGI2, but they don't block the thromboxane A2 because that's a COX-1 effect. And so as a result, you get clotting, the thrombi that form either in the cardiovascular system in the heart or in the brain and cause strokes.
So again, just to recap formination on the aspirin and ibuprofen debate here.
Yeah.
Aspirin first, wait 1 hour, then take your ibuprofen.
Yeah.
And guess what else we need to do here, Jay? What's document that in the chart
that we told
our patient how to take their ibuprofen with their daily regimen of aspirin.
Exactly.
Very important.
Yep.
If it wasn't written down, it never happened.
Yeah. Now, most of these NSAIDs are prescription, but there are a couple that are over-the-counter, as you know. Ibuprofen is either Aleve or Motrin. And the other one that is approved for over-the-counter is naproxen, and that goes by the brand name of Aleve. Now, with ibuprofen, a prescription dose is like 600 or 800 milligrams, whereas, as you know, the over-the-counter pill is 200. And with the naproxen or Aleve, the dose is 220. And with prescription naproxen, the normal dose is 500 milligrams. So... And that's twice a day. And so that's another drug that you can have the patients take over the counter is in addition to ibuprofen is Aleve. And that works well too.
Okay. Hey, listen, that wraps us up. Remember everybody out there, remember Pharma SP, proficiency in pharmacology prevents patient prescribing pitfalls. Now we remember, in 2 weeks will be Thanksgiving, so we're going to back up 2 days and do it on that Tuesday.
That's right. Yeah, we'll be on Tuesday,
November 23rd.
Same time, 5 o'clock on the West Coast and 8 o'clock in the East. So
we're talking about some NSAIDs and as well as some other new drugs coming out there. We strongly encourage any feedback. What else would you like to hear about? Because we have so many topics to talk about.
Yeah. And if you're watching us live on Facebook or on YouTube, then you can actually send us comments that we can respond. You can ask us questions, and yes, we can include that in the webcast here. So with that, we'll both say good night.
Good night, everybody.
And have a good rest of the evening.
Thank you for your time.